Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside the VSiN studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line, presented by DraftKings on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. You guys have one of the more important jobs that we have in our world here, and all the moms, we appreciate you guys every day, but especially on this day here, Mother's Day being May 12th. Michael, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, Femi. Yeah, it's Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers and the family makers. I know in my family particularly, you know, that it required her to be a mother, father, and everything because I was working all the time in this football world. But thank you to Millie, great mother to my two children and my grandchildren and all the mothers out there. And unfortunately, there's some of us that can't call their mother to wish them a Happy Mother's Day, but we are thinking of them and the memories that they have given us. I thought it was, it's a great day to celebrate.
100%. Mike Palm actually shared a nice Mother's Day poem with their show yesterday on Live Bet Saturday. At the end of it, I encourage anybody, VSiN Best Bets podcast, to go ahead and look it up. It was a really nice way
to wrap
that
he is. He's so good. I mean, there's nobody better than Mike Palm. He's a wordsmith. He truly is. It's incredible.
I told him that he should sell that poem to Hallmark or somebody to go ahead and put that in a card, and then we can go and make millions. Maybe we won't have to do the show.
Or maybe put it on the Hallmark Channel, make a movie out of it, right? I mean, Mike could produce a movie. He could be the star of that movie, too. Be the leading hero of it. Yeah, why not?
100%.
Why not? I mean, did you watch all the games yesterday, Femi?
I did.
Did you? Now, I know it's Mother's Day, and we're gonna have to sneak watching the games on today, but did you watch the NBA yesterday?
I did watch the NBA yesterday, and like my mother, she's still up in Seattle, so I'm going to give her the phone call on the way home from work. The games don't start till 12:30, so we'll do all the Mother's Day festivities and all that stuff prior to Knicks-Pacers starting later on this afternoon. But the games yesterday were interesting. A close one in the Western Conference between Oklahoma City and Dallas, and then last night, Boston was in control for much of that game. They're the Celtics getting back on track, taking a 106-93 victory to go up 2-1 in that series. And Jason Tatum, people have been asking for Tatum to step up. He stepped up in a big way, 33 points, 13 rebounds, 6 assists in the victory as Boston now regains control of that series in the Eastern Conference semifinals.
Well, I mean, I think when y'all watched that game, it was fairly clear. I mean, two things have to happen. Boston has to play poorly, and Cleveland has to play their best to win, right? I mean, This is just not an even series. This isn't about Bickerstaff not being the right coach. This isn't about Donovan, you know, him not being the great, Mitchell being a great player. This is about a level of disparity between the personnel elements of the team. And I think for Cleveland to win, which there's no way they're going to win the series, is Boston's going to have to play poorly. And Cleveland's going to, even when they play poorly, Cleveland's going to have to play their best game. To me, this is a mismatch. And I think the second game, like it happened in the Miami series, refocused the Celtics yesterday. And that game was never in doubt. Never in doubt. I mean, Brown was 13 for 17 from the floor.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about Tatum being great. I mean, Jaylen Brown was 13 for 17 from the floor. He played 41 minutes. He dominated the game. You know, he only missed three shots, and one of them was a three-pointer. So it included 9 rebounds. So, yeah, I thought that this is kind of a mismatch. And I think this is, if it goes 6, I would be totally shocked. How about you?
I don't know if I'd be shocked because the Celtics tend to have those lapses like we saw in game 2 of the Miami series and game 2 of this series. But I'd be shocked if the Celtics don't win the series. That's for sure. I don't see this going 7. I could see maybe 6 if there's a day where their 3-point shots are just aren't falling and they're kind of having like a lackadaisical sort of effort. But like you said, it's going to require Cleveland's best in that situation. Like Mitchell's going to have to do 35, 40 points. They're going to need more from Evan Mobley. They're going to probably need some more from Strus and LeVert and those guys. But Boston should win this series going away. You mentioned Jaylen Brown. After the game, he added a little bit of salt into the wound there for the fans out in Cleveland. They asked him about the urgency from the Celtics, and he said, quote, "We didn't come to Cleveland for the weather, so let's go." is what Jaylen Brown said after the game.
He's right. I mean, he's right. I mean, let's look, I lived in Cleveland. I love Cleveland. I love living in Cleveland. I really did. I loved it. You know, I'm an East Coast guy. I'm proud of New Jersey, but I did love living in Cleveland. But you're not going there for the sunshine all the time now. I mean, it ain't out all the time. It's gloomy. It's a little bit dark. It's going to rain a little often. And if it doesn't rain, you're going to get some snow. One thing about Cleveland, I will say this. When the weatherman says it's going to snow, there's a pretty good chance it's going to snow. Like here, not so much. But there, yeah, you're going to get it.
Listen up to the weathermen in Cleveland. I saw this stat, though. This was really good from Sean Grand, who I believe does some work for the Celtics. Yeah, voice of the Boston Celtics. And he tweeted this out, the best scoring differential. So the Celtics have now played 90 games this NBA season. They've won 70 of them, which is a really remarkable record. Their scoring margin, 11.4. That is the fourth best in NBA history, including the playoffs. The three above them were the 1971 Milwaukee Bucks, who won the title, the 96 Chicago Bulls, who won the title, and the 2017 Golden State Warriors who won the title. Is there a chance, Michael, that when we sit back and maybe when the season is over that we recognize the Celtics team as maybe an all-time great team? They don't have the all-time great player, but the collection of talent that Brad Stevens did a great job of putting together, Joe Mazzulla's done a great job coaching this team, they just have no weak spots when you watch them play. And when they're healthy, they really are a juggernaut this NBA season. And so far we've seen it in the playoffs when they're dialed in.
Well, the only way you recognize greatness is to win a title, right? I mean, that's all. Then all of a sudden, once you get into that category, then we start analyzing how great of a team it is. And credit Brad Stevens. Porzingis isn't even on the court. He's one of their best players. Brown, Tatum. I mean, look, they've done a great job of building to take Al Horford back after they let him go to Philly. I mean, it's been a really good job by them. They've got the role. They fixed the problems of last year. So I think if they win this, and look, it's not going to be easy because we know the West is always going to be challenging. I mean, Dallas is a really good team. The Thunder are growing up right before our eyes when we watch that series. And then, you know, we saw Denver that had the heart of the champion and come back and just whoop Minnesota the other night. It'll be interesting to see how Minnesota responds to that whooping. So I think the West is really prime. But someone told me the three best teams in the league really are Denver, Minnesota, and Boston. And I think that's right.
Yeah, I think that's definitely right based on what we've seen in the playoffs and also a little bit of what we saw in the regular season as well. I know OKC ended up getting the one seed in the Western Conference, but I think at their ceiling, Minnesota and Denver were the two best teams in the Western Conference. Maybe I'm disrespecting OKC, but that remains to be seen. Speaking of the Thunder, they fall to the Dallas Mavericks yesterday afternoon, 105-101, a really entertaining game. It was back and forth the whole way. I don't think there was a lead bigger than like six or so once we got to the second half, but Dallas holds off the Oklahoma City Thunder. PJ Washington, I was surprised by what he did in game two. He followed it up with a 27-point performance in game three, 11 of 23, 5 of 12 from beyond the arc. They didn't even get their best Luka Doncic game. He was 7 of 17, 22 points, but he was impactful on the glass with 15 rebounds. As the Mavericks now take control of this series 2-1, sort of putting Oklahoma City up against it heading to game four on Monday night.
Well, I mean, this was a rugby game, Femi. This is kind of what struck me at watching the game. I mean, they didn't call anything. And, you know, they've told teams that they're changing how they're going to call in terms of when a defender drives. Earlier in the year, when a defender was driving and there was contact in the clear way, in the path by the defender, it was going to be called a foul. Mm-hmm. And they went and told all the NBA teams that we're not doing that. The only person they're giving that call to now is Alexander. They've called that. And one of the officials in the game yesterday, I mean, he only called 3,000 in the fourth quarter. I mean, think about that. I thought that game was kind of a little bit of a rugby. They were beating up on Doncic. I mean, Dort could have fouled out in the first quarter. I mean, he fouled out at the end of the game, but he could have fouled out in the first quarter. I mean, their intent is to make it so hard for Luka that they wear him down and frustrate him. And then what we saw was the brilliance of Kyrie Irving. I mean, wow. You know, everyone has always said what a great player Irving is, and we've kind of let the off-the-field court, his commentary, interject into his true talent. And yesterday, I think you saw his true talent. And if Oklahoma is going to continue to put all the pressure and do what they're trying to do to Luka and leave probably one of the best one-on-one players in the NBA alone, they're going to pay for it. Because Kyrie, when he decides he wants to become offensive, wow. I thought that left-handed shot was incredible. And look, you know, I think the other factor is the strategy of fouling in the game when they're behind Oklahoma City Thunder. I mean, they got a break of it because Lively was 8 for 12, came back and made only miss 4. But this game should not have been as close as the score indicated because, I mean, they were 64% from the three-point line, the Mavericks. They were 16 for 25. And, you know, if they're better at their three-throw line, they're going to be much better. But, you know, I love watching Dallas play. I think they're really fun. And I like watching the Thunder. I just think, to me, you know, the way they're calling the game is a little unfair to Luka.
It's interesting that, like, from game to game within a series, just based on the officiating crew, you can get a totally different game. I thought we saw a little bit of that between Denver and Minnesota Friday night, to where it was a much tighter whistle with the Tony Brothers crew than what we had seen in the games in Denver, where they were letting physicality happen. Like, the T-Wolves were able to actually just kind of, like, press up on Murray and just sort of, like, just use their size to their advantage. That wasn't the case when they went home, which is usually you go home, you think you're going to get a good whistle because you're the home team. It was really ticky-tack in that game, and then Denver was able to kind of – I'm not saying the Denver won because of the officiating, but it at least helped them kind of get into a rhythm, more of a rhythm,
yeah,
to when they were able to kind of get some of those points offensively. So it's kind of – it's like I think almost think you got to figure out who's officiating these games before you really dive in and sort of scout those crews and what they usually call.
Yeah, and today, I mean, look, I thought the Knicks-Pacer game Friday night, was it? Was it Friday night?
Yep.
Was another rugby match. I mean, now I don't think it was a foul on Brunson late in the game when he tried the three-pointer. He was looking. I didn't think that was a foul, but you could have called fouls at numerous times in that game, and they just let him play. Look, I like it. I'm not complaining, but I think they crossed the line with Luka yesterday. I just kept watching that game saying, man, are they going to call anything on this guy? And, you know, they never did. Alexander got calls. He got 3 and 4. Fourth quarter, no one else did.
Yeah, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, he gets a lot of calls out there. But hey, he's a really great player, and I guess he's earned them finishing second in the MVP market. We'll continue to break down the NBA. We got JVT in hour number 2. He'll help us break down as well. But on the other side, let's turn our attention to NFL rookie camps. Those rookie QBs are on the field. We'll get our first thoughts on this next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with the free VSiN Daily Newsletter. In today's newsletter, you can see all of the plays for today's NBA playoff games. Go ahead and get you some of those tips before you bet the games later on this afternoon and evening. Get expert analysis and the latest odds delivered straight into your inbox, absolutely free. Visit VSiN.com/newsletter to subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Michael Lombardi out in New Jersey. Femi Abebefe here in downtown Las Vegas. Rookie mini camps already underway across the 32 National Football League teams. It's exciting to get those guys out there they're only in shorts and t-shirts, but still just seeing them in NFL helmets and colors and throwing the ball around. It reminds us that football's always around the corner. And in Chicago, everyone has all eyes on number 18, Caleb Williams, the number one overall pick in this past draft. And Caleb Williams already has been named the starter for the Chicago Bears. Matt Eberflus going ahead and says, we're not having these questions throughout camp. We're just going to go and get this thing done with right now and name Caleb Williams the starter. Is that a little surprising to you, Michael? Caleb, I mean, we all knew he was going to start, but we usually don't, even if it's the number one overall pick, they usually don't tell us until about August or so that they're going to be the QB1. But Eberflus said, let's just go ahead and get that out of the way right now.
Well, they signed no really veteran backup. I mean, if Caleb gets hurt, I mean, Bear fans, I hate to break the news to you, but Tyson Badgett isn't going to be able to win many games for you. I mean, they put all their chips into this, and I would have thought Ryan Poles would have had at least a veteran behind him. Not necessarily to nurture them, because I think that's a little bit of a more of a media hype than it is an actual reality, but somebody that the team, if it was going good, maybe could get you two or three games, which I don't think Badgett can. And certainly Brett Rypien has proven that he can't. So what options does he have? I mean, they're going to start the era, the Caleb Williams era, and making no bones about it, and move forward and give him every single rep, Femi, that they can possibly give him, which is a good thing. He needs every single rep. And so, yeah, I think the hardest part for a coach is Caleb Williams didn't earn the job. He was given the job, but I think the players will recognize his talent, which will make it a lot easier.
Yeah, we talked about during the draft process how Caleb Williams, the visit there to Chicago Bears was a little bit different than most visits. He actually met with the players, the veteran guys. You brought the point about how he has to sort of ingratiate himself to those guys and fit in with those guys to truly be a leader. And Caleb Williams was asked about leadership earlier this week at the rookie minicamp. And despite what's been out there about Williams and the fingernails and the cell phone and the wanting equity and all the noise that's around Caleb Williams, here's what he had to say about leadership and what he needs to know as a young player.
To be a great leader, you got to learn how to follow first. So right now I'm following all the vets. I'm following all the coaches. I'm listening, having both ears open and my mouth shut, just kind of sitting back listening. And then, when I get to the point when I learn everything, when I learn the ways of how we do it, the culture, the playbook, and what the offensive line, wide receivers are all doing, running backs and tight ends and things like that, then you can start taking the lead. Then you can start taking the helms of all of it and take the next steps. For right now, though, I'm listening more than I'm speaking and talking, and I'm taking it one step at a time, being the moment.
Yeah, well said. I think that's what you want to hear when you draft a guy number one overall.
Yeah, really good. Yeah, I mean, that's what he should be doing, and I think to me it's a good way to start a career. And, he's got Shane Waldron to coach him there and to see buy into the offense. It's all more than he can handle, right? The other thing is when you name him the starter, you don't have to mess around with trying to scale back the offense or trying to do things for two quarterbacks, which make it a little difficult. Look, he's going to need to get speeded up as quickly as he can. Adunze shows up, he's got, which a lot of these young players, when you see these rookie camps, guys that are held out because they've got hamstrings or those kind of injuries, what's happened during the process is you spend most of April not really working out because you're traveling all over the place. And so now you come into a rookie camp and you're not really ready to go, which obviously, lends yourself to have hamstring injuries and that type of thing. So, yeah, I mean, the more time he can spend with Keenan Allen, he can spend with DJ Moore, he can spend with Cole Kmet, I mean, I think that's really going to help him a lot. But they're going to have to make sure they can protect him because there's no one behind him.
Yeah. In the case of any sort of injury, that's disaster situation for the Chicago Bears. So Caleb Williams saying all the right things so far, doing all the right things out there at Bears rookie camp. We'll see what happens when the veterans show up for the OTAs, the mini camp later on next month. Jerod Mayo, New England Patriots head coach, had interesting comments about Drake May on his initial impressions. He said, quote, "He has a lot to work on, but I have no doubt he'll put the work in." We saw the odds move, and I thought this was really fascinating. We were talking about this during the break before we came back on the air. Earlier, Drake May was in like that plus 300 range to be the week one starter for the New England Patriots. That got bet. It's now down to plus 190. You can get Jacoby Brissett at minus 250. So Drake May, who a lot of the experts said was a little bit raw, needs some more seasoning, maybe a little bit of time to redshirt before he steps out there onto the field. Somebody out there in the betting market thinks that maybe he's closer to starting than we all think.
Yeah, I don't see that, Femi. I think they signed Brissett for a plan, right? They gave him $8 million. They want him to be the starter. And look, it's going to creep up pretty quick, right? Because here's what you got to say. This is a rookie camp. There's nobody else out there with them, right? It's all just a bunch of young players that are going against there. It's the game's going to go slow. And I think what Gerard said is true. It's going to take him some time to get caught up to speed and go from there. But More than anything, I think there's got to be some sense of patience in terms of the development of Drake May, right? They've got to get their offensive line in really good shape. They've got to make sure the rest of the offense is. They're going to need to really, really be careful because you don't want to put him in there and get him hit and get him hurt and, lose a lot of time. Again, it goes back to player development. We talk a lot about this on the podcast, about how to correctly develop the young players. And the fans want to see Drake May play, which is reflective in the betting market, right? I think fans are trying to get him to play because there's a sense, well, we can't win with Jacoby Brissett. Well, you can win some games with Brissett. Now, you're not going to win a lot of games with Drake May taking over the team. He's going to have to play within a framework of the team, offense, defense, kicking game. Same thing with Brissett with more experience. So I think it's going to just need a little bit of patience on the Patriots' part. They named Elliott Wolf the vice president of player personnel, so they've cleared that up. Right. They kind of have their guy who made the draft picks involved. They've got Mayo to run the team. They got Wolf to run the department. So there they go.
Drake May right now 18-1 to win Offensive Rookie of the Year over at DraftKings, with the expectation being that he's probably not going to be on the field week one, despite what that move was made in the betting market. But I know we're on Nesson right now. We have a lot of New England Patriots fans who are watching and listening, and we appreciate them. They're probably asking, well, what do we need to see before we declare that Drake May is ready to start? Like, when do you know a quarterback is ready when they're early on in their career?
I think when they have the confidence of the team, right? I think when they can go in the huddle and really command the huddle and understand what's going on. I think it's more about their demeanor, their stature, their confidence, right? It's the, you know, most times the confidence because they're don't know. They don't know what to expect or what's going on. You know, and Caleb Williams is a very confident kid, and I think he can go into the Chicago Bear huddle with confidence. Drake May, I don't think is as confident because he's so young, and I think it's going to take a little bit of that confidence to get going. And I think that's what you want to see. You want to see confidence, and you want to see him improving every single day at practice. Accuracy, knowledge, just all the things that fans can't see. They just watch, you know, the clip of him throwing, and that becomes important. Look, New England's rebuilding their team. Last year, as I've said many times, if they had a better field goal kicker and they had a better quarterback, they probably would have won 7 games. But they are where they are. They've got to revamp this offensive line. They've got to hope they can play as well defensively as they did last year and move forward. But I don't think you want to rush a young player along that's not ready. And I just don't see May starting. I think the fans are reflecting in the line movement, not the reality.
Yeah, I mean, the fans, they're going to want the shiny object, and Drake May is that shiny object in the Foxborough area, plus 190 to start week one. J.J. McCarthy is the new object in Minnesota, plus 120. There, we're starting to see some of the clips from Vikings rookie minicamp, and then Bo Nix, minus 340, a heavy favorite to be the week one starter for Denver. Bo Nix recently signing his rookie contract, so he's officially a member of the Denver Broncos, and I sit there, I look at Bo Nix, he's going to start week one, or at least that's what we all think, but his price is still 16-1 to be Offensive Rookie of the Year. That just has to be market perception of him. Maybe the market thinking that he's not as good as Sean Payton and the Broncos think.
Well, I think this is reflective clearly of the perception based on what the draftniks think, right? Because the fans have to go by what Mel thinks, what, you know, Daniel Jeremiah, all that. And when you listen to what Sean Payton said just recently, you know, I think he came off the field wowed by his location of the football, his command, you know, and his ability to get caught up quickly within it, you know, is he was surprised how well-versed he was. And of course, you got to temper what you hear this time of the year in May because, you know, it's a little bit, they're trying to be positive about their team, but I think what Sean said coming off the field, I think he likes Nix. And look, if he can manage Nix and Nix does exactly what he wants him to do, then I think ultimately he'll be successful. I'm not saying he's going to be a superstar. I'm just saying he's going to be fit within a framework of the team.
Yeah, and that's the big thing right now. It's like I just see this is the guy who's going to be playing early. Sean Payton clearly is, I mean, sort of betting on his job on Bo Nix, saying, hey, like, this is the guy that I wanted all along. Let's go ahead and make this work. There's full investment from everybody in the organization. Yep. I think Bo Nix may be being slept on a little bit here, but I'm someone who's invested in Bo Nix in the past. All right, on the other side, comeback player of the year talk. It's a hot and heavy market. We'll break it down next year on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
For a limited time only, we're offering our annual subscription at an unbeatable price. Listen up. It's normally $240, but you can now grab it for just $199. Sign up today, and we'll also give you an extra 2 months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day when you use promo code Lombardi. That's the important point, promo code Lombardi. You're going to get all the daily best bets, the leaderboard. You're going to see the percentages, the ROI, 19 hours of live programming, the betting systems, the betting splits, everything your heart desires to make you a better bettor. Once again, visit VSiN.com/subscribe to claim your 14 months of VSiN Pro for only $199. And the important one to note, promo code Lombardi. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Get on that deal now with everything that we have to bet on. It'll lead you all the way out until this time next year and beyond. So that's a heck of a deal that we've put together. We encourage everyone to take advantage of it. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi. And Michael, I was looking at the comeback player of the year market, and boy, we got some heavy hitters this year in this market. This is star-studded. The favorite right now, four-time MVP Aaron Rodgers coming off of the Achilles injury. You have Joe Burrow, who's won this award in the past. He's at 2-1 returning to the practice field earlier this week. Kirk Cousins is at 5-1 looking over his shoulder at Michael Penix Jr. We got Elliott's guy, Anthony Richardson, at +750. Russell Wilson, 12-1. Deshaun Watson, 15-1. Nick Chubb. I mean, this is just Justin Herbert's into this mix as well. A heck of a market here. And I think a big name player will ultimately win this award. But when you see this, how do you break down comeback player of the year this season?
Well, my first question is, how is Russell Wilson even in this category? Like, I had no idea, right? Like, what is he coming back from? But again, you know, we said this on our podcast last November after Joe Flacco made that start in Los Angeles. We said, heck, he's going to be comeback player of the year. So, you know, good for that. I think Burrow is prime for this award. I really do. At 2-1, I know it's not a great number, but I think if he comes back and all indications are that he's healthy, which we kind of anticipated, and the team around him is good, and they've improved defensively. Look, to win this award, I think your team has to win too. You know, if Russell goes to Pittsburgh and they don't win, which they have, they always win, it's hard to win comeback player. You're going to have to, and the field is pretty loaded, right? Rodgers, if he plays well, is going to be clearly getting all the attention. Burrow is going to get all the attention. Anthony Richardson, if Indy wins the South and they play good, of course he's going to get all the attention as well. So, but I think you have to link this. This isn't it's an individual award, Femi, but I think it goes to the team too. I don't think you want to bet a team that you don't think can win.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because like winning means relevance, and that's how people start talking about you. And even last year, like it required Baker Mayfield to win the NFC South to be in the conversation. Joe Flacco helped the Browns make the playoffs despite all the quarterbacks that they went through, and they were able to go ahead and win that award with Joe Flacco winning it. So like you need to be on a winning team to be relevant to ultimately win, especially when there's so many star-studded players here. Aaron Rodgers is an even money favorite. That to me seems a little rich. I don't know if I would go down that path, just given the fact that he is 40 years old. He's coming off the Achilles injury, and we haven't seen him play football in about a couple of years now. How do we know that it's going to be the same Rodgers that we've grown to know and love, the four-time MVP? There's a chance there that I'm not saying he's going to be bad, but what if he's just okay? Can he win the award if he's just okay? Yeah. And isn't the Aaron Rodgers that we've known prior to the Achilles injury?
Well, I mean, let's go back to the Aaron Rodgers prior to the Achilles. I mean, the last year in Green Bay wasn't good, right? I mean, it wasn't a typical Aaron Rodgers year. We all know that, right? We all understand that. I mean, it was, you know, it was a year that, you know, there was 1,000 excuses that were relative to it. And, you know, the Packers went 8-9. He wasn't the same player, threw 12 interceptions that season. So what Aaron Rodgers are we actually getting, you know? And then he misses a year. You know, now he's coming off of 20 and 21, where he was the two-time MVP, but that was 37 and 38. Now we're going to be 41. A little bit of a different story here. So is it going to be 22 Aaron Rodgers or 21 Aaron Rodgers? I think that's the question you have to ask yourself. I'm not sure on that. And how good are the Jets? I think they've tried to improve their offensive line. There are ifers. If Mike Williams stays healthy, if the offensive line, I mean, there are a lot of ifs here. So I think that's the question you have to answer. How good now? Everybody's going to believe the Jets are great because Rodgers, but Rodgers at 39 at Green Bay wasn't the same Rodgers at 38. There was a trending down, which was exactly what happened with Russell Wilson that no one wanted to pay attention to.
100%. Yeah, everyone says he just needs a new scenery, get him some playmakers. That was not the case, and I'm sure Jets fans
are. Let him cook. All he needed was an apron. Just get him an apron. That's all he was going to cook.
Well, Pete was
just
holding him
Russ
back.
Just let Russ cook. Nobody writes about that, you know?
Pete was holding him back.
Pete was holding him back.
Yeah. Those are real.
Right? Yeah, so.
Those are real takes.
But Nick Chubb, I think, is certainly going to appeal to people at 18-1, but are we sure Nick's going to be the same Nick Chubb coming off that knee? I think that's always a concern you have. I mean, look at Tony Pollard last year off of his surgery that he had on the ankle. It wasn't a knee, but he wasn't the same Tony Pollard that we saw before that, right? It took him a little bit of a while. I would lay away from that. you know, Daniel Jones, do you have faith in that? I'm shocked he's 25-1. I mean, the book's a little stingy here, don't you think? At 25-1, Daniel Jones hasn't been good. So my question is, what is he coming back from?
I mean,
like, there's never been a bar set. Like,
I guess that maybe like, 2 years ago, okay, they won the
like
playoff
Anthony
game.
Richardson's. Yeah, but he wasn't any good. I mean, he averaged 6-9 yards per attempt. They didn't win because of him. That's the biggest fallacy, right? What is Anthony Richardson coming back from? The University of Florida? Like, I don't get the award. Like, okay, Kirk Cousins was injured. He was good. He set a standard of excellence. We know that. And if he plays above that or near that, that qualifies. Same with Burrow. Same with Rodgers. Mm-hmm. I don't know about Russell Wilson. He wasn't injured. He got benched. What's he coming back from? Deshaun Watson, injury, right? Mm-hmm. Daniel Jones, what's he coming back from? I mean, when has he been good?
I mean, that's a fair question to ask.
If you want to give most improved, if you want to give a most improved player, okay, great. I got all that. He improved. He was bad. Now he's good. I got that. It's like Tyrese Maxey. I mean, how could he get most improved? He was good before. I didn't understand that one. He was good before all this happened.
Well, I think you're getting into the secret sauce of this award is that it kind of is, it's turned into the NFL's version of most improved player, because Geno Smith, when he won it a couple years ago, like he had never really like arrived as a good player in the NFL, but he'd been kicked around the league, bounced around, and then he made that big leap that not many people expected, and it's like, oh, wow, comeback player of the year, even though he had never really arrived as a second round pick to the New York Jets. So there's a little bit of like obviously coming back from injury that is mixed into it as well, but if there's no compelling injury story that we can grasp onto, it sort of turns into most improved player, which is how Geno Smith won it a year ago. And that's why you see some of these guys like Daniel Jones, who in his fairness is coming off of an ACL injury as well, but he wasn't really like ever established as a good player. So it's kind of a little bit of most improved slash coming back from sort of medical hardship is what makes up this comeback player of the year thing. You brought up Anthony Richardson, who's plus 750. Last year, he started 4 games. So I'm not sure if he could even win this award, given the fact that he only played in 4 NFL games. Like he's still, I don't know if people think of him that way as a guy that ever arrived, because it was so early in his career when he suffered that injury. That's a little too short of a price for me to ever get involved with Richardson, at least in my opinion. Do you think a non-quarterback can win this award, Michael? I mean, QBs have won this award every single year dating back to 2018.
No, I can't imagine it, because if the team, because it's also linked to the winning of the team, right? So the team has to win in order for the player to get the credit, and who gets all the credit when a team wins? I mean, look, we had this conversation earlier in this block. I mean, Daniel Jones gets credit for the Giants winning 9 games mm-hmm. when really he had very little to do with the 9 wins. I mean, even though he got paid for it, he had very little to do with it. He was good. He wasn't great. They didn't win because, again, it comes back to why we won, why we lost. And that's the answer. So I think it has to be a quarterback. And again, like all these awards, and including getting into the Hall of Fame, like there's no definition of what it takes to get into the Hall of Fame. There's no definition for what is a comeback player of the year or what is the most improved player. They don't define it. And so therefore the criteria is spread out all over, which makes it very challenging for the books because they can get hit from every single angle. I mean, Joe Flacco, we said was good, you know, was a good bet at what, 200-1
yep.
when he was coming, you know, there you go. Why not? Right. But what was he coming back from? The couch, right? Yeah. I mean, Flacco was good at one time, and let's not forget he won a Super Bowl, right? So you can make fun of Flacco all you want, but what was he coming back from?
No, 100%. Yeah, he was Super Bowl MVP, which is, yeah, he was coming back from the couch, but he had reached the pinnacle of the profession. Super Bowl, Super Bowl MVP, and all that stuff. Then obviously then Lamar gets into Baltimore, and Flacco's kind of just kicking around the league and came back from the couch. And it's, I think Flacco's the perfect part, like perfect analysis for this is that you have to be a compelling story as well to win this award. Geno Smith, when he says that they wrote me off, but I didn't write back, that was instantly like compelling for a lot of media folks who vote on this award. You have to be compelling. It can't just be the production. It's sort of a little bit based off of vibes, which, as you said, it makes it challenging for the books, which is why as bettors, I love this market because there is no definition. It's all open to the interpretation, which means that there could be some areas that you can attack if you just keep your ears to the streets and figure out what everybody's, I guess, latching onto. As it was last year, it was Joe Flacco.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, and I would latch on to me, I think that Burrow would be a guy to latch on to because if they win again, he's going to get the credit.
He will, but maybe he'll be the MVP. Who knows? Can he win both? Is that something that can happen?
Yeah.
Yeah,
could.
Could be. Brady and Manning have won this award, so Burrow's right in that class as well. All right, let's do a little NFL Draft 2021 retrospective next year on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VSiN. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi here on this Sunday, May 12th. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. We will be talking some NBA in hour number two. Our senior NBA analyst, Jonathan Von Tobel, will join us at 11:30 Eastern, 8:30 Pacific to break down the couple of games today and what we'll see the rest of this postseason here. But Michael, let's stick to the gridiron, and I want to get to the draft grades, because right now we're seeing all the draft grades for this 2024 class, that instant analysis, which is, it's good for the content. I understand why, like, the editors tell the writers to go ahead and do it, but should bettors be thinking about these draft grades and factoring them into their handicap for this season? Because I think that we're gonna do a little exercise about the 2021 class, but I just want to get this off the top here for this 2024 class that we saw just get drafted a couple weeks ago.
So, I mean, let's just put it in perspective. Draft grades are grades that the person doing the grading is grading based on what they think the answers to the test are, not to the correct answers of the test. So it's almost like the student is grading the teacher. And does, you know, and maybe the student's right, but maybe the teacher's right. So it's all subjective. And I think you can't run and scream and say, oh boy, yeah, this is right. Let me put my money on this because they had a great draft. When in fact, you have no idea about the draft, because the person grading it, it's all predicated on their board. It's all predicated on their opinion. And do you really want to go with their opinion, or would you rather go with reality when the summer comes in? The other thing is, look, let's face it, the numbers aren't going to move that much. And so why not just sit tight and wait until we start playing football, not playing two-hand touch?
You know, the grades are interesting, because, like, I always think about what kind of impact can a really good draft have immediately for betting standpoint. Obviously, for the future, it can impact your franchise greatly. But for what folks who are listening and watching us, they say, all right, like, how does it impact what I'm betting on in the 2024 season? Outside of it being an impactful rookie quarterback, does it really move the needle, regardless what position? It could be a great receiver or a great pass rusher. Does it really move the needle outside of the quarterback position like we saw with Houston last year?
Well, I think with a pass rusher, it certainly can, right? I think, you know, when you get Parsons and Dallas, and he can step on the field and make an impact, certainly he helps your defense. But football's a game of three dimensions, offense, defense, and the kicking game. And it's hard for one player outside the quarterback position to really impact the win percentage, and especially at the cornerback position, right? So the guys are coming in, they got to learn how to play a certain way, learn the coverages, and, you know, they can make an impact on covering a guy, but do they necessarily help the team win? You know, can Arnold help Detroit win more games? Yeah, because he provides a position of need at corner, but they've already added a bunch of corners. And so he's not going to move the needle. The collective group will move the needle. And I think that's the most important thing. You have to understand that the draft is always about the next year's team, even in the first round. Now, Dallas is going to need some guys to come in, and they drafted in the first round. They're going to need those guys to play right away. But most teams that need guys to play right away without a specific role always end up becoming disappointed, because it's a little bit too fast of a game once they start.
Yeah, it's asking a lot for these rookies to be instant impact players. It happens. It's not to say that it can't happen, but it's a really difficult thing to do here for rookies. That's why the ones that do, they end up hitting really big, like we saw with the Houston Texans a season ago. And the reason why we wanted to do this now is because, like, the draft grades are coming out, and it's kind of a caution to a lot of bettors and people who just love the sport, because you think back to the 2021 class, which we're finally getting the final verdict on, with the fifth-year options having to be declared this past week. 18 of those 32 first round picks from 2021 had their fifth year option picked up, which is pretty high. That's pretty good. Used to, some years it's 12 or 13. So 18 is pretty good for the 2021 class. The quarterbacks now, not so good, but the non-QBs, a lot of those teams wanted to pick up those options and keep going down that path. Some of the grades, though, from this 2021 class, rather interesting, I have to say, to say the least here. We look at our Chicago Bears, who got an A+ for the 2021 draft class.
Yeah.
They drafted Justin Fields in that draft, and not too many players from that draft class are still remaining for Chicago.
Right. And see, this is the problem is Fields is great, right? The Dolphins drafted three players in the first round. They got an A. Holland, the safety, in the second round, right? And so Phillips is a really good player, and he can help their team. There's no question. Smith certainly, I mean, Waddle certainly helps their team. So those two, Phillips has been hurt quite a bit. He was hurt at Miami as well. The third player, Noah, and I can't pronounce his last name, yep, the corner from Auburn, he's on Dallas's team. So he really didn't make a difference. I think you go back, like I find one player, like when Kellen Moore got picked in the third round, I thought to myself, wow, that's really not a good pick. Like to me, when you watch Kellen Moore play at Texas A&M, everything you didn't want in a quarterback, Kellen Mond, you know, he had no anticipation. It was one look and run. And everybody's talking about, well, Jimbo Fisher runs a pro-style passing game. Stop. He doesn't. It's not. It's a Jimbo Fisher's. There's no link between what he does on the field and pro. It has nothing to do. It's all mythology. It's all promotional. And so, you know, when you read the report, you know, Mond won't push Cousins immediately, but has a tremendous skill set. He's one of college's most productive players. He never made it even through it. He just got cut again. So I think you have to be really careful about the verbiage and the grades because you can't link that into what the team is going to become. I mean, look, the Steelers got C minuses and they drafted Najee Harris, a very productive player. They drafted Pat Freiermuth in the second round as maybe one of the better tight ends who can block and catch. And yet they only could get a C out of the draft because, again, nobody wanted to draft Harris in the first round. It's all judgment. It's all based on bias. And anytime anything's based on bias, you have to be very careful to put your money in that direction.
Yeah, 100%. It's like evaluate the evaluator. Who's telling you this information? Who's giving this to you? What's their track record? Because if you're going to put your money behind something, that's how critical you have to be of the analysis that's given. I guess because there's so much noise, we hear teams always talk about, we got to block out the noise. We got to block out the noise. It's become cliche. But as bettors, we kind of have to do the same thing as well. What should people be kind of listening to? What should they be focusing on right now as they're getting ready to go ahead and make some of these bets? Because the schedule comes out on Wednesday. Markets for all 272 games are going to be out there. They're going to have the win totals, all the division stuff, the conference, the Super Bowl. All that stuff is out there already. What should they be focusing right now in May to get ready for the fall?
Well, the betting market is just exactly the same as the stock market. It's about data. That's why buying the VSiN package is so damn important because you're going to get a lot of information, institutional information on the sport you want to play, which is really important, really important. And so like then you were looking for variables within the marketplace. Okay, Seattle won 9 games last year, one of the worst teams defensively in the National Football League. I wrote about this on VSiN.com. And the reason I think Seattle is undervalued at 7.5, just like when you're trying to buy stocks, you're looking for undervalued company with good leadership. Mm-hmm. You know, you're looking for somebody who's come in a company that's undervalued and is going to take it over. Same thing in sports betting. So here they are, Seattle, one of the worst teams defensively. Pete could never get it straightened out. You know, they had a hard time with scheme. They had a hard time adjusting. They bring in Mike McDonald, really a good coach. And he did a great job with Baltimore's defense. So they're going to improve defensively. They add Byron Murphy in the first round, one of the best three techniques in the draft. They revamped their linebacking core, which they needed to do. They're going to get better pass rush. They have a good secondary, as you know. Last year, their offensive line missed a lot of games. Lucas and Cross missed a bunch of games. They add Christian Haynes, a very good player from UConn, to start at guard. Now, all of a sudden, this team is pretty good. You got Metcalf, you got Lockett, you got Smith and Jigba. You got some really good receivers. You got two really good running backs. You know, and you could say, well, they have Geno Smith. Geno Smith's better than a lot of guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think Sam Howell could be. So I wrote that they're undervalued at 7.5. Do I think they're going to win 12? No. Do I think they can win 9 again? Sure. I mean, remember, they were the 8th seed last year in the NFC. And if they don't lose to Pittsburgh, which they should have won, but again, their defense allowed 200 yards rushing, 200 plus yards passing, and gave up 30 points to Mason Rudolph. And they were home. They were 20-13 in the last 2 years over at home. So what you're looking for when you're looking at the draft is the combination of the offseason and the draft. Do I think Murphy will make a difference? Yes. He comes in, plays a role. Do I think Haynes can help be a starting right guard? Yes. He comes in and plays a role. But the team around them is good, but the coaching is good. because I have faith in McDonald based on what I saw with Baltimore. Everybody thinks Baltimore's this elite defensive team. No, they had some good players. They have really very few coverage corners. I mean, Hamilton was the best player in their secondary. You know, Marlon Humphrey's an inside corner, not an outside corner. And they did a great job of utilizing their personnel. So that, to me, is no different than examining a company whose value is undervalued. And so you buy stock in that knowing it's going to go up. Same thing with Seattle.
It feels a little bit like Green Bay last year. This time last year, you were writing about how the Packers were a little undervalued in the market. Their win total was 7.5. It took a little bit of time to come on, but they came on late in the second half of the season. They went over that win total with ease, winning 9 games and going to the divisional round. So maybe buy the company and kind of sell the news that's out there with everybody overreacting to the big change. All right, hour number 2 begins with what's on Michael's mind next here on the Lombardi Line.